Well, welcome to iFormRx, where we explore the evidence that matters to ambulatory care pharmacy practice. My name is Stuart Haynes, Editor-in-Chief of iFormRx, and today we are talking about the pharmacist patient care process. In May 2014, the 11 member organizations of the Joint Commission of Pharmacy Practitioners endorsed a conceptual framework that informs the patient care work of all pharmacists, regardless of practice setting. While there has been widespread support for this conceptual framework, there has been a lackluster adoption in practice. To help us understand what the pharmacist patient care process is and how every practice can take steps towards implementation, I've invited Dr. Melissa Soma-McGivney from the University of Pittsburgh School of Pharmacy to share with us her thoughts and experience. Dr. McGivney is the Associate Dean for Community Partnerships and has played a leadership role in the development of the Pennsylvania Pharmacist Care Network, which has done training throughout the state of Pennsylvania regarding practice transformation and implementation of the pharmacist patient care process. And she also leads the Community Leadership Innovation and Practice Workshop Series, which is affectionately known as the CLIP series, where student pharmacists become a part of a simulated pharmacy network with over 80 community pharmacy locations. And lastly, Dr. McGivney and her colleagues developed the iFormRx resource page on the pharmacist patient care process. So Melissa, thank you for joining me today for the iFormRx podcast.
Thank you for having me here today, Stuart.
So I think most pharmacists have a vague awareness about the pharmacist patient care process, but could you give us a brief synopsis of what this process entails?
Absolutely. And I think you're right. You know, as we're growing as a profession and getting closer to the patient themselves, it's really critical that we have a standardized approach. When you think about a dentist and their approach to examining an individual's teeth, they literally start counting in the exact same order all over the world. So every tooth has a number and it's done in the same order. Physicians have a standard approach by which they examine a patient for a physical exam, starting from head to toe. And so for the pharmacist, the Joint Commission on Pharmacy Practice put this together to an attempt to model for pharmacists what we already see in other healthcare professions. So the process itself has really a series of five steps, with the first being about collecting information regarding the patient's medication needs, assessing that information and identification of drug therapy problems, creating a plan, implementing that plan, and then following up and evaluating through monitoring parameters on that plan. So it's a very general, almost generic approach that can be applied to any patient in any setting. The caveat of it is that it has to be preceded by a very specific philosophy of care that the pharmacist is responsible for meeting the patient's medication-related needs. So if we all have that philosophy in mind, the process falls in a very specific way.
There are two different practice frameworks that have been widely publicized and implemented to some degree. One is medication therapy management, or MTM, which is a process of care that's been around for more than a decade now, and it's a billable service under Medicare Part D. More recently, the Patient-Centered Primary Care Collaborative and the American College of Clinical Pharmacy have been promoting a process called Comprehensive Medication Management, or CMM. How are these two frameworks similar to the pharmacist patient care process, and what are some key differences between them?
Stuart, I think this is a really important question because as each of these have come out, I think pharmacists are asking that and getting the terminology easily confused. And so what I always go back to and when explaining this is that there's three key steps to any patient care practice. There needs to be a consistent philosophy of care, a consistent patient care process, and a consistent practice management approach, essentially a way to ensure payment or sustainability of the practice. And so when you look at MTM, or medication therapy management through Part D, it provides us an important part of practice management, and it provides us with a payment model. But the process by which it happens has been highly variable from one location to the other, and the philosophy has been somewhat variable as well. When you look at the JCPP patient care process, it's a very specific focus on the pharmacist patient care process. It doesn't talk about payment, and it assumes a philosophy of care. When you look at comprehensive medication management, it is truly meant to be more comprehensive. So it's really today's current terminology for embedding that philosophy of practice, the philosophy of care, the patient care process. And if you take a look at the CMM document, it uses the same terminology as the JCPP, pharmacist patient care process, yet it dives even deeper. So when you look at the document that describes CMM, it goes through very specifically even more details of the process by which a pharmacist goes through. And it begins to touch on how those two things, the philosophy of care, the patient care practice, lead to payment. It doesn't provide payment, but it's the structure by which payment can be achieved. So it's been an evolution from understanding we have to have a consistent philosophy. There's terminology about the specific patient care process. And if you look at the JCPP document and the Comprehensive Medication Management document, they are completely in line with one another. And then the final phase is, how do you get paid for the work that you do? And MCM provides a payment mechanism. And ideally, you would be utilizing the JCPP process in the provision of medication therapy management.
So state laws determine the scope of practice for pharmacists, and some states have more progressive regulations and laws than others. What do you see are the biggest legal barriers to adopting the pharmacist patient care process? And we'll talk about other barriers in a moment, but first I'd like to talk about the legal issues that can limit or impede a pharmacist from fully implementing this process of care.
I'm glad you asked, and you used the word fully implement, and I think that's a really critical difference in how we take a look at the laws. One aspect I think it's really important that we always remember is that all pharmacists in every single state can provide care to the patient. They can use the patient care process in their evaluation and assessment of an individual patient. Where the question comes in is, do I have all the support and tools that I need to make that assessment the strongest? And then we'll talk later about payment, because those are the two aspects. So the legal issues tend to revolve around access. If you look at every state practice act, I just can't emphasize enough how we are all empowered to take care of people in all of the states in which we all practice. But the legal issues arise really from access to data, access to health information, access to other healthcare professionals, and then finally payment. And so when we look at states with collaborative practice agreements, this has been a really important evolution over the past 10 to 15 years, how nearly every state has some level of provision of collaborative practice agreements, allowing pharmacists to partner with either individual physicians, physician groups, prescribers, to be able to share information more quickly, and for the pharmacist to be able to make changes on behalf of the physician under protocol. We all know the caveat to that is it varies from state to state. So, you know, in one given state may have a wide opportunity to utilize collaborative practice agreements, whereas in a state that has a very different level of authority. So that is a challenge, and so there's not equal accessibility of partnering with physicians and prescribers to make therapeutic changes from one state to the other. The other issue that has been arising is as we start looking at health information exchanges, so we start looking at electronic transmission of health-related information, is the recognition that a pharmacist needs to be a part of those health information exchanges. Many of them are being built looking at data from physician offices or data from hospitals or data from labs. And the pharmacist, not only dispensing data, but access to that health-related information is also important. And so that leads to the pharmacist recognition as a provider. It leads to not only just recognition for payment, but the ability to be a part of or a recognized part of some of these different exchanges.
So I wonder if you could tell us a little bit about the evolution of Pharmacy Practice Act in Pennsylvania. I'm sure it's similar to many other states over the last 10 to 15 years in terms of what the pharmacist has been allowed to do. Are there some highlights in there and some things still that you believe in Pennsylvania restrict pharmacists a bit and that you wish were changed?
So our state of Pennsylvania, as you know, it's physically a large state. We have a large population and we also have a very large state legislature. So the evolution of our Pharmacy Practice Act has been unfortunately slow. What we do have in our state is recognition of the pharmacist within a health system or within a hospital to be able to do protocols. And those protocols are essentially collaborative practice agreements for specific areas. And we are still awaiting the regulations. While the law changed, we do not have the regulations yet in place allowing for collaborative practice agreements in the outpatient setting. So yes, indeed, we have work to be done here in Pennsylvania. And I want to caveat, because I'm sure everyone that listens to this has something in their state that they would like to be broader or more collaborative. And we've not let that limit us. You know, we have a number of very innovative practices, and I'm sure those folks that are listening also do. And so one of the things is, while there are legal barriers, it's also just as important to understand how you can work within the current law structure to make an impact. And so in Pennsylvania, the Medical Practice Act provides wide breath and decision making of the physician to partner with whomever they choose to meaningfully make therapeutic changes for patients. And so there are ways when pharmacists are connected directly to a physician that their scope of practice in partnership with the physician can be somewhat expanded in a very responsible way under the physician's medical license. So I share that only to say there are a lot of good things that need to be done with pharmacy practice laws nationally. At the same time, patients still need us. So it's working within the confines of the laws in the state in which you work are also really important.
So while some state laws can hinder pharmacy practice in some instances, overall, it sounds like there aren't significant legal barriers in most states. So what's the biggest hurdle? Why aren't pharmacists adopting the pharmacist care process routinely as a part of every patient encounter?
I think you would hear a resounding answer that says payment. As you talk to individuals who employ pharmacists, whether it's a pharmacy or a health system or those pharmacists who want to be individually employed, it's really about their ability to get paid for the work they do. So if I go back to the three things that it takes to have a successful practice in healthcare, to have a consistent philosophy, consistent patient care process, and then a way to manage that practice or essentially get paid. And so the challenges tend to be, one is recognition. So how could insurers or employers identify those pharmacists who are ready, willing, able, in the position to provide care? So recognition is important. And that's where the advocacy for provider status is hitting. It's recognizing a pharmacist as a provider. The second is, how do you get paid? And so provider status may open up some opportunity to utilize coding structures that already exist for payment. At the same time, even without provider status, what is needed are solidified business models that specifically value the contribution of the pharmacist to that patient population. The other aspect of payment that is challenging is that we're living in an evolving healthcare payment world right now. So the majority of the country is moving from a heavy reliance on fee-for-service, so payment for specific tasks, and moving to this more value-based or collaborative quality approach. And in that approach, again, it's how do you individually value the work the pharmacist does? So that's where examples of successful business models are so critical. And in the resources that we shared as a part of this iForum Rx, we included a number of different resources that are snapshots of successful business approaches. One resource in particular that you might want to take a look at is titled Get the Medications Right, a Nationwide Snapshot of Expert Practices. And there are 15 different examples in this document that walk through not only the provision of care, but really importantly, how the pharmacist was valued and was able to have a position to provide that care. So yes, there's a lot of work to be done on the payment side, and it's the sharing between pharmacists and practices that at this point is a really critical part of that.
So you mentioned these successful practices. What are the ingredients for success? You know, what would need to be in place for a practice other than payment mechanism? Clearly, that's an important part of it. But what other things need to be in place for a practice to transform from a product-centered practice to a patient-centered practice?
And that's a really important question. And it always starts with what are the needs of the people that you're serving? And those needs encompass the patients, in some cases, the community at large, in some cases, if you're embedded in a physician practice, the practice itself. And so when we look at the different practices that we partnered with, we always start with articulating that practice model. So making sure that every time we're going in, we have a consistent philosophy of practice and a consistent patient care process. Our second thing that we do is look to identify champions in the community. Sometimes those are the technician that works in the community and lives in the community. In a physician office practice, it may be a physician or another prescriber. And to always think about the work that we're doing as a part of a team. The pharmacist is going to be most able to provide care when the people around them are also supporting that care. In the community, it's really important to work with the pharmacy technician to make sure that they're practicing at the highest level that they're capable of in order to shift some of that dispensing work to the technician, allowing the pharmacist to focus on the patient. In a physician office or in a clinic environment, it's making sure that you're partnering as a part of the team and delivering the unique care that the pharmacist can in partnership with the team as a whole. And then it comes to the payment side. It's how can we do the work that we want to do within the confines of the system in which you're employed? In the community, we're looking at some direct billing. In a physician office, it's how is that physician group paid, and where are the missed opportunities? Where are the gaps where payment isn't available? And from there, developing that value proposition and sticking to it, knowing that I'm going to provide care and this is the revenue that could potentially be generated from that. And making sure that you have someone who is not only able to lead the process of care, but also be able to systematically implement that process and always evaluate it so that you're able to demonstrate the value that you're bringing back to the patient population, to the organization that you're working with as well. So there's a number of steps in order to have a successful practice, but it always starts with meeting the needs of the people that you're serving, and it always ends with continuous quality improvement.
So tell me a little bit about you. How did you get involved in this work? What would you say to others who want to get more involved themselves?
You know, I suspect, like a lot of pharmacists, I was working in the community where I grew up, and I saw the medication-related needs that my neighbors and people that I went to church with or saw in the grocery store had related to their meds. I knew the physicians that worked down the street. My father happened to be on the board of directors of a small local hospital, and so we knew the hospital. And I thought to myself, why aren't all these people working together? We're all trying to make the health of our community better. We're all trying to take care of people, but we're doing it in such separate ways. And I can tell you that still to this day, that's what drives me, is thinking about the community in which I grew up and thinking about how is it that we can better provide care in a systematic way that helps all people. And as I went through my training, recognized that there are pharmacists that wanted to provide care better. There were physicians that said, I really want to work with the pharmacist and I don't know how. And that led to saying, well, why can't we all do this? Why aren't we all able to provide the care that we already know that people in our community need and deserve? Why aren't we working with the physicians and other healthcare prescribers? Because they want to work with us in some capacity. And that really led to having to understand the infrastructure of how things get paid, what the laws are, and what those barriers are. And when you have an awareness of what the challenges are, it allows you to think around them. I always use the example, if you're driving to work and there's an accident, you're still going to get to work. It just might take you a little bit longer to get there.
So what are the next frontiers? What are some of the most creative and innovative ways you've seen pharmacists getting involved in patient care over the last few years? And what about practice networks? What's on the horizon?
Well, you know, I think there's a lot that's happening. I mean, we're living in a time where healthcare is evolving right before us, where there's significant public health needs that relate to medication use and misuse. And the opportunity for the pharmacist to be a part of those solutions is very evident. So some of the things that I've seen, and it always starts with an innovative, creative pharmacist. So that's everybody that's listening. It starts with you. And recognizing what it is that the people that you serve each and every day need the most. And so some of the value-based models that I've seen are where the pharmacist knows they want to provide care, there's a need of the patient population, and they really begin to understand the business structure by which they're working in. And so the pharmacist has made a value proposition that's clear to allow to provide care in that arena. So that's one kind of way, and that's more on the physician office side. The community pharmacy side, there's been a whole host of really interesting, intriguing things that have happened. I don't think there's any question as to whether pharmacists that practice in the community want to be able to do more than dispense products. The question continues to be, you know, how do we move from one business model to another? One example where I've seen some interesting contracting happening between insurers and pharmacies is on the transitions of care side. So they've created some value-based models where the insurer knows that they have a certain percentage of patients that tend to get hospitalized, and they want to ensure that those folks don't go back into the hospital. And so they've created incentive payments where the pharmacist in the community is seeing that patient and doing comprehensive medication management on that patient within 72 hours of discharge, certain amount of money that's paid for that. And then the pharmacist is expected to follow up and ensure that that patient doesn't go back into the hospital for the next 30 to 60 days. And there's additional payment incentives that are built in when the pharmacist and the patient don't end up back in the hospital. So there's been some creative contracting with financial incentives. The third area that we're pretty excited about is the development of these practice networks. And in many cases, they're community pharmacy practice networks. And we've put those resources on iFormRx. One of the groups that has really led this effort is Community Care of North Carolina. And we've put links to some of their work. They've envisioned and are carrying out a network in North Carolina of community pharmacies where they're calling it their Enhanced Community Pharmacy Services Network. And this is a collection of pharmacies that are ensuring a high level of not only dispensing services, but wraparound services that ensure that people are able to be adherent and take their medications. And this has been the open door to have conversations with payers in order to do that next level of service, which is the comprehensive medication management. They've spread this concept and philosophy to a number of other states, including Iowa and right here with us in Pennsylvania. And we're in the process of growing our Pennsylvania Pharmacist Care Network. We have over 150 pharmacy locations included at this point. So there's a lot of infrastructure being built, both within health systems. So there's some really cool things happening in health systems with pharmacists as a part of care teams in the health systems. And also on the value-based model side and on the community pharmacy side, it's really these buildings of networks. I think you're going to see some amazing therapeutic advances with pharmacogenetics, different ways that pharmacists can communicate as a part of a healthcare team from a technology standpoint, and really looking at patient engagement is another aspect. So how do we best engage people in their own health, not only for the profession of pharmacy, but clearly for healthcare as a whole? So there's a lot of exciting things coming, and I think it's important that as pharmacists that we're a part of those changes and speaking with a consistent voice, a consistent philosophy of care, a consistent provision of a fundamental patient care process are really critical to us as a profession moving forward and being an important aspect of this changing healthcare landscape that we're seeing. I think it's a very exciting time to be a part of the profession of pharmacy.
Well, thanks so much, Melissa, for joining us today and sharing with us your thoughts about the pharmacist patient care process and having a consistent philosophy of care and a consistent process of care. If you have comments about the pharmacist patient care process or your own experiences, be sure to leave us a comment. We'd love to hear from you.